Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It is 6 a.m. in Shanghai, 4 p.m. in Mexico City, and 6 p.m. here in Atlanta. I'm Linda Kincaid, in for Julia Chatterley, and wherever you are in the world, this is your First Move. A warm welcome to First Move. Here's your need to know. Campus unrest. Police arrest hundreds of people across the United States as protesters rock universities from coast to coast. Higher for longer, the U.S. Federal Reserve Chair says interest rates will remain higher for now. And fancy floating away in the house from up or speeding towards a night at the Ferrari Museum. Airbnb might have your answer. That conversation coming up. But first, the latest on the U.S. campus protests. Dozens of people arrested at the University of Wisconsin-Madison as police try to remove the encampment on school grounds. And at UCLA, all classes have been cancelled there after overnight clashes between pro-Palestinian demonstrators and counter-protesters. Police were later called in to break up the violence. In New York, officers cleared out pro-Palestinian protesters at Columbia University overnight. The school there has asked the NYPD to remain on campus until after its commencement ceremony later this month. New York City Mayor Eric Adams said there were outside agitators at Columbia.
There were individuals on the campus, should not have been there. There were people who are professionals. And we saw evidence of training. We saw a shift in tactics that were being used. And when you start using the intelligence that Intel was able to supply, we knew it was time to communicate directly with the school and say, you have more than a peaceful protest on your hand.
Our Nick White has this report.
Early this morning, campus police arrested dozens clearing an encampment at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
They started pushing them, they started shoving them. Students were held down with batons.
Most were released without citations. College officials say it's unclear how many were affiliated with the school. They say some resisted arrest, report four law enforcement officers were injured, and say peaceful protests that abide by campus rules are still allowed. Just no tents.
We are grateful that our protesters are still here and they are exercising their First Amendment right.
Last night in New York, police dressed in riot gear arrested around 300 as they cleared Columbia University's Hamilton Hall, which had been occupied by pro-Palestinian protesters here on the campus that largely kicked off this now nationwide movement.
There are individuals and organizations that are not students. We're seeing a shift in tactics that are being used, destruction of property, destructions of cameras.
Columbia's president said the, quote, drastic escalation of the protests pushed the university to the brink. Overnight at UCLA, counter-protesters, pro-Israel protesters among them, breached the barricades around the pro-Palestinian encampment, which also breaches UCLA campus rules. A firecracker thrown in, cones and more flying through the darkness, pepper spray from inside that camp. The college newspaper photographed a counter-protester spraying from an aerosol can. Daily Bruin reporters on the scene were slapped and indirectly sprayed with irritants. We are sickened by this senseless violence and it must end, said a college spokesperson. Ever since this encampment sprang up Thursday morning, tension has been mounting. The first scuffles Thursday afternoon, more over the weekend, hence the barriers and the buffer zone that was breached last night. The university has allowed the protesters to control who enters the camp. Monday, a Jewish student posted this. Protesters well outside of their encampment, he says, blocking his way.
They're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance.
UCLA called this abhorrent and removed those barriers. Then last night, this.
You're gonna block Jewish kids? Yeah, let's see. We're fighting back.
What happened last night was an attack on our encampment by Zionist thugs that the university did nothing to stop.
UCLA has, until now, kept security light, the LAPD, out of sight until late last night. But after what happened, today, law enforcement is on site, and all classes are cancelled.
Well, Miguel Marquez is following the story at Columbia University, where, of course, 300 people were arrested. We heard from university administrators saying that they believed outside agitators were pushing people to stay in the campus. What do we know about those arrests?
Well, we are waiting to hear from NYPD and from Columbia how many of them were actually students and how many were outsiders. Keep in mind, this has been going on for a couple of weeks here, so some people were expelled, some people were suspended. They may have been students in the last month or so and may not be a student officially at Columbia as well. We've heard some students saying that outsiders who aren't connected to the school were given IDs to get in. So I think all of that is going to get sorted. We know that many of these individuals have been booked now and face either a return to court. I don't think any of them are being held any longer at this point. But I want to show you what's happening outside the gates. Last night, a very different situation here. Protesters, this is the Amsterdam side of Columbia University. One thing about this university is that because it's in a square, police were able to move in very, very heavily and locked the entire area down as though it were a major event. That kept protesters, they pushed all protesters back out of the zone so that police then could go in and remove all of the protesters that were both in Hamilton Hall, which is just here. The Bearcat and that device you saw them get up on the window with went in right on this side. They were able to clear that and the encampment on the university. And right now, these are NYPD officers out front of the university. They're on this side and the main gate on Broadway. All of this was shut down yesterday, which was it was impressive to see NYPD move in so heavily. It also helped them control the situation. And because they had so many officers at the ready, they could bring people out that were being arrested, keep officers with them on those buses all the way. So amazingly, there were no reports of anyone being injured in this entire operation. Linda?
Yeah, which is absolutely really extraordinary. For those that have been detained, the 300 or so, do we know what charges they could face? And are there any other further repercussions at the university?
They're just starting to go through all that. It's going to be everything from trespassing to perhaps assault if they try to assault officers or a range of different. They also did damage to the building, certainly thousands of dollars of damage to Hamilton Hall. So some may face charges for that. For right now, the university is sort of trying to keep everything where it is. It is essentially shut down. This is the only entrance that students and faculty can get onto the main campus through. And they're going to keep NYPD officers in some numbers, not huge numbers, but on campus through May 17th. They're moving into their finals period right now. And then on May 15th is a commencement. And this was part of the problem. In the center of Columbia University is a massive lawn, and that's where they set up a commencement. It's thousands and thousands of people. So having that encampment there was really disrupting. It was a few hundred people disrupting the university and lives for about 40,000 students. Linda?
Yeah, it's just incredible. And while you were talking, Miguel, we were just showing some live pictures at the University of Texas in Dallas, where it looks like riot police are moving in there and trying to remove an encampment there. Yeah, no sign of protesters, certainly where you are right now. And have you heard any indications of where the protesters will return?
So they've been at different colleges. City College, they were very active last night as well. Today, Fordham, which is, they have a downtown campus or midtown campus, and there were protesters there, and apparently they're on the march out through Manhattan. Look, New York and Manhattan, big cities across the country and around the world have seen these protests almost every day. And New York, they've been shutting down bridges, and it's started to focus on campuses now. It's happened at a time that's difficult for schools to deal with because of finals, because of, you know, the end of the year and commencement and all the other stuff that goes along with that. A lot of the individuals who are graduating this year, the university points out, didn't have their high school graduation because of the pandemic. So this one was particularly special for some of those people graduating this year. So it's a mix of a lot of stuff. This is not going away. Despite the fact that it's quiet here today, it's not going away. I expect protesters to be back here in some form at some point. Linda?
All right, Miguel Marquez on the story for us at Columbia University, while we look at those pictures coming into us from the University of Texas in Dallas. Certainly a heavy police presence there. Many protesters certainly still waving flags as they try to pull apart an encampment there. We are continuing to follow this story, and we will keep you abreast of any developments. Miguel Marquez, thanks so much. Well, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has wrapped up his visit to the Middle East, where he's been pushing for a ceasefire in Gaza. And during his stop in Israel, he visited one of the entry points into the enclave. Israel has also reopened a border crossing into northern Gaza. Blinken told reporters that aid distribution is ramping up, but of course it has a long way to go.
We have seen in recent weeks real meaningful progress that is starting to make a difference for people in Gaza. Yesterday we were in Jordan. Some of you saw the trucks being loaded in Jordan. They went through Erez for the first time today, and that's very important because that's direct access to the north of Gaza. We have our own maritime corridor that is probably a week away from being operational. Given the immense need in Gaza, it needs to be accelerated, it needs to be sustained.
Well, our Paula Hancock has more on the relief effort in Gaza.
Children queue for food in Deir al-Balah. For many in this central Gaza city, it's the first nutritious meal they have had in weeks. This child says, "I haven't been given a meal for a month because the kitchen team was struck. We only had canned food." The World Central Kitchen has resumed operations in Gaza, saying it served 200,000 meals Tuesday, 1 month after seven of its workers were killed by an Israeli military strike.
"We can see people's desperation. People have no food, and we are all displaced."
More aid is starting to get in. The UN group responsible for supporting Palestinians, UNRWA, says it is the most since late October. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken calls it measurable progress, but both he and UNRWA say it still falls woefully short. Last week, the World Food Programme said the flow of aid is still crippled by red tape.
"Spending hours a day to get in through a checkpoint is not good enough. Being able to only use checkpoints for a short period of the day is not good enough. We have enough food, it's do we have enough access?"
The Israeli army said Wednesday it is expanding areas in the south of Gaza to which civilians can move and where they say humanitarian aid will flow. It's assumed to be part of Israel's plan to evacuate more than 1 million civilians from Rafah on the southern border before a long threatened ground offensive. A move that humanitarian agencies warn would be catastrophic.
"More than 1.2 million people are now seeking shelter in Rafah governorate. They have very little to eat, hardly any access to medical care, little shelter, and nowhere safe to go."
In Gaza, every day is a battle to survive the bombing, injuries, the lack of food, water, or shelter. And the situation is worsening by the day, according to the UN, saying disease and starvation are on the rise.
"We must do everything possible to avert an entirely preventable human-made famine."
UN aid chief Martin Griffiths warned this week, "We are in a race to stave off hunger and death, and we are losing." Paula Hancock, CNN, Abu Dhabi.
Well, to Mexico now, and what is being described as the most violent election in its political history. Weeks before polls open in June, about 30 candidates have reportedly been murdered. David Shorthill takes a closer look at those attacks and what they mean for this crucial election.
Gisela Gaitan was running to lead the city of Celaya, Mexico, where she had spent her whole life. In recent years, crime had engulfed the city. We're survivors, she says in a campaign ad. And together, we're going to find the strength to confront our fear. She would never get the chance. Authorities say Gaitan was shot dead by men on motorcycles as she processed down the street on April 1st. It was the first day of her campaign. Since the federal election process began in September, at least 20 candidates from across the political spectrum have been killed in Mexico, according to Votar Entre Balas, a civil society election monitoring project. Security expert Sandra Ley studies how organized crime in Mexico has increasingly used violence to influence elections over the past 20 years.
This is how organized crime has become de facto rulers in these communities, trying to capture politics, economics, and the social life of these territories.
I know where you are. Watch your back. This is a recording of a threat made in March against Jesus Corona, the candidate for municipal president in the city of Cuautla, a couple hours outside of Mexico City. They want me to drop out of the campaign, he says. They don't want me to participate. They want to continue this corrupt government. Organized crime nearly got their way. Corona was driving home one night in March when two men on a motorcycle sped past and opened fire.
It's showing us the bullet holes. There were three up here that you can see on the front of the car. Y hay dos más aquí abajo, ¿no? A couple
more. Sí, acá, esta parte de aquí.
Corona now campaigns under armed escort, part of a security program run by the federal and local government that experts say can at times move too slow to keep up with the threats that candidates are facing. In Celaya, just hours before she was killed, Gisela Gaitan telling reporters, "We've asked for protection. Let's see if we get a response today." In the wake of her death, Mexico's president vowing to make it easier for candidates to apply for protection. If it's necessary to eliminate procedures to make support more expeditious, we'll do it. We can't hesitate with this. With 1 month until voters head to the polls, a devastating calculus for the candidates here who are putting their lives on the line. I was born here. My grandchildren were born here. I'm going to continue fighting. If it's necessary to risk my life, I'll risk it.
You're not scared.
Tengo miedo, soy ser humano.
I'm scared. I'm a human being. But that same fear lifts me up to move forward and trust in God. David Chortel, Mexico City.
We're still ahead. The latest global weather forecast, plus Powell's predicament. The Fed chair admitting that progress on inflation has stalled. But he says another painful rate hike is not on the cards. And Airbnb hopes its new Icons program will become iconic. The company is announcing a whole host of unusual new travel experiences just in time for summer travel. All those details just ahead.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to First Move. I'm Linda Kincaid. A volatile start to a new month on Wall Street tops today's money move. U.S. stocks closing Wednesday's session mostly lower, but the Dow was able to post modest gains. Stocks rallied earlier in the season after Fed Chair Jerome Powell said the central bank's next move is unlikely to be a rate hike. But Powell admitted that progress on inflation has stalled and that the timing for rate cuts is now highly uncertain.
What we've said is that we need to be more confident, and we've said, my colleagues and I today said, that We didn't see progress in the first quarter, and I've said that it appears then that it's going to take longer for us to reach that point of conference. So I don't know how long it'll take. I can just say that when we get that confidence, then rate cuts will be in scope, and I don't know exactly when that will be.
The Fed, as expected, held interest rates steady as it just concluded the meeting. Some investors had been expecting 3 rate cuts later this year. That scenario is now looking more and more unlikely. Well, for more on the Fed's policy path, I'm joined by Ken Rogoff. He's a professor of economics and public policy at Harvard University. He's also a former chief economist at the IMF. Good to see you, Ken.
Thank you. Good to see you.
So as expected, the Fed kept interest rates on hold at the 23-year high. It seems those post-pandemic, historically low interest rates are almost like a distant dream. And it doesn't seem that we're going to see any cut anytime soon.
Well, what they're really looking at is the long rates. So mortgage rates, car loan rates, credit card rates, where people are looking further ahead, they're very high. And I think investors are just thinking the Fed doesn't have as much room to cut as it thought it did. I think the world of those ultra low interest rates that we enjoyed after the global financial crisis, there wasn't much else enjoyable about it, but that's probably not coming back.
And we have seen quantitative tightening on a scale never seen before in a bid, of course, to help push some pressure to keep those prices down. The Fed today said it will slow the pace of that come June. What impact is that likely to have?
Not much. I mean, compared to interest rate cuts, quantitative tightenings when they're selling off some of their long-term debt and kind of putting it back out with the public, it has a very small effect compared to the interest rate. I think the problem is that we live in a world where the kind of interest rates that they thought would really hold back the economy are not restraining it as much. You know, that said, I think the Fed wants to be really careful about cutting rates until it's sure it can keep going in the same direction. It would be very embarrassing and also confusing if it cut rates and said, oops, just kidding, we have to raise them again.
Yeah, exactly. Highly embarrassing. Of course, the Fed chairman said today that inflation is just stubbornly high. And this comes a day after the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, gave this wide-ranging interview to Time magazine, saying that if elected, he'll put a 10% tariff on all U.S. imports. What would that likely do to inflation?
Well, it's going to drive inflation up, especially when our trading partners start retaliating. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what the initial impact would be, but it's certainly going to destabilize the system, have all sorts of effects on wage increases and price increases. Hard to know. I mean, it'd be quite destabilizing. If he did that and frankly stopped there and everybody could believe that, fine. But he's also saying 60% on Chinese imports, which is a lot of what we import, it would have a pretty big effect.
Yeah, exactly. Ken Rogoff, professor of economics at Harvard University and former chief economist at the IMF. Good to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to weather. And a highway in China has collapsed Wednesday, killing at least 19 people. Southern China has been battered by heavy rains in recent weeks, and Guangdong province has faced the brunt of it. Floods there have forced more than 110,000 people to leave their homes. Our Chad Myers is following the story and joins us now. Chad, things look pretty dire there.
Sure do. And we talked about this yesterday, how that rain was coming, and it's going to come again on the weekend. But the rain has finally moved offshore, moved a little bit closer to Taiwan, which we'll see some rain showers and maybe even some flash flooding there. But here's what the pictures looked like there as that roadway completely just washed away from underneath. Now, the rain has moved away for now, and it is gone tomorrow, and it's really even gone through Friday. But let me put how much rain is going to come down by Sunday. And you see there's still spots north of Hong Kong with 250 millimeters of rain. That's 10 inches of rain before Sunday. And that's what's going to be happening here again on very saturated ground. Temperatures are in the teens and the 20s. But look at you, Beijing, all the way from 29 to 19. That will probably feel pretty good because it has been very warm. Parts of the plains of the United States affected by tornadoes. Yesterday, 13 tornadoes on the ground with one fatality and still some injuries. We have the potential for more tornadoes today and a slight chance for tomorrow, but tonight will be probably after dark for many of you in parts of West Texas, Western Kansas, and even some severe weather, including hail, as large as the size of a baseball in parts of southern Texas. So yes, pretty significant weather there here. The good news is this is not a highly populated area, certainly population density out there, but not like big cities like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles. People are more widely scattered, spread out a little bit, more of a rural area where you can actually even see them because there aren't that many trees out there either. Maybe you can see them coming and get the warning out, but we don't want you going out there and looking for them, especially if the sirens are going off. Need you inside the house in the lowest level if you can get there. There's more rainfall to come too, especially for parts of eastern Texas that's been very, very wet. Watch out for you, Houston, and even College Station and the like there. There could be 4 more inches of rain expected by Friday. Linda.
Wow. Yeah. Batten down the hatches, as you say. Chad Myers, good to have you with us. Thank you.
You bet.
We'll stay with the First Move. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to First Move with a look at more international headlines this hour. And Arizona's Senate has voted to repeal the state's near-total abortion ban. The Civil War-era law bans abortion at all stages of pregnancy, except to save the life of the mother. The vote paves the way for Arizona's 15-week restriction on abortions to be reinstated once it's signed by Governor Katie Hobbs. The U.S. House has voted to pass a bipartisan anti-Semitism bill. It comes amid pro-Palestinian protests on university campuses across the country. Supporters say the bill will help fight anti-Semitism on campus, but critics say it threatens to chill free speech. The American Civil Liberties Union says the bill could lead to a crackdown on criticism of the Israeli government. Well, Georgia's parliament has voted to advance a controversial bill that would require some groups to register as foreign agents. If passed, it would affect organizations who get more than a fifth of their money from abroad. Protesters gathered in Tbilisi to oppose the vote. Critics say the bill is inspired by a Russian law and would hamper the nation's bid to join the EU. Well, a reminder of our top story, sit-ins, run-ins and face-offs. And now the tents day on campuses across the US after a tumultuous 24 hours. You're looking at clashes here between rival protest groups at UCLA. According to the student newspaper, fireworks and tear gas were let off, and there has since been relative calm, with police now stationed on campus. Well, the mayor of Los Angeles is calling for an investigation into that. Well, elsewhere, New York police cleared protesters from Columbia's University's Hamilton Hall. We understand about 300 people were arrested at both Columbia and City College, New York. Well, more than 30 people were arrested at the University of Wisconsin-Madison as law enforcement moved in to tear down a protest site. Demonstrations there are ongoing. Let's get more on the protests and their wider significance. Javed Kalim is a staff writer at the Los Angeles Times and joins us now. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So you've been to various demonstrations at several universities in California. Of course, we have seen a range of responses from coast to coast, from police going in, from violent arrests, from police holding back and allowing and obviously being criticized for waiting too long. What have you seen?
Yes, here in California, we've had Berkeley, UCLA, of course, where we just saw what was happening. University of Southern California has had almost 100 arrests in the last week, and many other universities, UC Irvine, UC Riverside, Cal Poly Humboldt up in the north of the states. And we're seeing students protesting in the same way for the same goal. They all are asking for divestment from Israel, divestment from weapons companies involved in the Israel-Hamas war, and incredibly different responses and outcomes, where universities are trying to balance this idea of free speech with where violence or disruption may happen.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, we've been hearing that chant, disclose and divest. You know, they're not going to stop, they're not going to rest. But in terms of the college responses, only two universities, as you point out, have actually said to protesters, we'll hear you out. One of which saying, present us with a proposal as to how we divest. Do you think other universities might follow suit in that regard, or are most standing firm on this?
Yeah, today Brown University came to an agreement with its encampment and protesters saying, okay, let's talk about this divestment idea. Earlier, before this current stage of different encampments, our Dartmouth also said it would discuss this idea and receive proposals with protesters. You know, the University of California system, which is pretty big and has a lot of investments of all kinds, has taken a stance against outright boycotts of Israel, for one reason, saying that it believes in academic freedom and freedom of ideas and exchange. So it's all different the way they're handling this. But the universities, notably, for the most part, by and large, have not denied that the students claim that they are invested in war-related companies in some way. The universities have essentially acknowledged that.
We're just looking at live pictures right now coming into us from the University of Texas, Dallas, where there is a standoff right now. There are a riot police on the scene. There is a gathering of protesters there waving flags. And we saw earlier police trying to pull apart some sort of encampment of tents. These protests just have been really intensifying over the past week and a half or so. But we've also seen instances of Jewish students, both those saying we've been harassed just trying to get to class, and others saying we are with you, like we agree that what Israel's doing in Gaza is not the right way to handle this situation. How crucial is it to show that cross-section of opinions even within the Jewish community?
Yeah, there's probably, you know, three camps maybe or more of Jewish community students. On one hand, there are a lot of Jewish students involved in the center in organizing these protests. That's not uncommon. I've been to them and you meet a lot of Jewish students there. The other thing is you will see a lot of Jewish students who walk by them or see them on the screen and are very offended at some of the chants, a chant for Intifada or from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Or chants, you know, saying Zionism is racist. These are offensive to students who support and believe in the idea of Israel being a nation for Jewish people. And then there are incidences as well where Jewish students have approached on video camera some of these encampments and tried to get in and said they've been blocked. And then these students feel that they are basically being denied access to their own campus. So there's a variety of issues going on here. But there is, you know, to be clear, anti-Semitism happening. I mean, yesterday at the University of Southern California, a swastika was found on campus, on the outer edge of campus. So, you know, that's undeniable.
Mm, yeah, and disgusting. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Javed Kalim, good to have you on the story with us tonight on First Move. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to see in an exclusive Iran Showdown Network the kind of firepower it used to target Israel. Just a few weeks ago, Iran launched hundreds of drones and missiles in an unprecedented attack on Israel. Most of those weapons were intercepted, but it gave a glimpse of what Iran is capable of. Frederick Plagden has more from Tehran.
When Iran attacked Israel in mid-April, they fired hundreds of ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones, developed by the elite Revolutionary Guard Corps Aerospace Forces.
So these two were used in the Israel operation.
Now, the Revolutionary Guard showed us the types of weapons they used to strike Israel, including two ballistic missiles, the Emad and the Adar, with a range of more than 1,000 miles, able to carry about a half-ton warhead.
How accurate are these?
Accurate? Mm-hmm. Less than 5 meters.
Less than 5 meters you can hit the target.
Brigadier General Ali Belali was himself once a missile commander in the Revolutionary Guard. He says Iranian missiles managed to hit two targets in Israel, including an airbase, in retaliation for the bombing of Iran's embassy compound in Syria. While the U.S. and Israel claim to have shot down nearly all of Iran's missiles and drones, the general says Tehran showed the power of its aerospace forces. Today, our drones and missiles have become an important factor of strength and the execution of power in the world, he says. He also showed us this cruise missile, a type also used in the strikes, and arguably currently the most infamous drone in the world, the Shahed 136.
Can you show me the warhead? Yes. I've never seen the Shahed warhead before.
Penetration.
Yeah.
And then it goes in the inside of
into the missile, and then it explodes. Okay.
While the Iranians acknowledge using Shaheds against Israel, the U.S. and Ukraine accuse Tehran of also giving hundreds of these drones to Russia, Moscow using them to attack Ukrainian cities and energy infrastructure. The Iranians continue to deny those accusations. The general tells me the Shaheds attack in swarms, often fired off secretly from unmarked trucks like this one. Everything is pre-programmed, he says. The flight route is chosen according to the enemy's capabilities and blind spots of radars and all the elements that can help us reach the target. While tensions between Iran and Israel have somewhat eased after they traded direct military blows for the first time, the general warns Iran has even more modern weapons at its disposal. The only path for them is to have logical and wise negotiations with us, he says. In our defense capabilities, we don't depend on anyone. We've had good progress in this field, and we will progress more. There are achievements that have not yet been talked about. Fred Pletkin, CNN, Tehran.
Thanks to Fred. Well, still ahead, Airbnb is taking post-lockdown revenge travel to a whole new level with its brand new Icons program. If your dream is to hang out with Doja Cat or Kevin Hart or wake up in the Orsay Museum in Paris, this next segment is for you.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish. Okay, by now you have probably heard that rappers Kendrick Lamar and Drake went after each other in a once-in-a-generation rap battle. By the time algorithms were done, the Kendrick-Drake beef had reached far beyond the walls of hip-hop. What can we learn from the first great rap battle of the streaming age? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Well, the summer travel season is almost upon us. And if you're having trouble planning something new or unusual this year, Airbnb may be able to help. The rental platform is branching out into a whole new genre of travel experiences that it calls Icons. The goal is to give people a one-of-a-kind, unique experience to a place, as well as with a famous VIP. The first 11 Icon listings have just been announced, and they'll include spending the night in the Ferrari Museum in Maranello, Italy, or waking up in the Orsay Museum in Paris, hanging out in Prince's Purple Rain House, or going on a tour with Colombian superstar Fade. The experiences are apparently affordable and extremely limited. Well, Jay Carney joins me now. He oversees global policy and communications at Airbnb. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Linda. Thanks for having me.
So, Jay, where do I sign up for one of these experiences? Because they sound very unique, and they seem like they would be expensive, but it sounds like they're not. Just explain.
Well, they're not. In fact, the 11 that we announced today are either free, $0, or under $100 per guest. So, you know, we really wanted to make sure that these out-of-this-world, unimaginably fantastic experiences weren't out of reach for potential guests. And so that's why they're priced the way they are. And you can actually book or request to book some of the 11 that we announced today, because they dropped today. Others will drop later this week. If you go on the app or the website, you'll see that there's a countdown clock for each icon telling you when you're able to request to book. And the rest will drop, you know, between now and October. And we'll continue to have new icons, similar kinds of, incredible experiences and stays, dropping for the rest of the year into next year. There'll be a permanent icons category that you can track for new ones as they come. We're very excited about this because we think we've created something here that allows people to experience things that they only dreamed of doing, and in some cases never existed in the real world until now, like the Up House or the X Mansion from the X-Men comic strip.
Yeah, I mean, they sound incredible experiences. So how do you win the chance? If you click on request to book, who's likely to get it?
Well, I think we're hoping to see a lot of excitement and therefore demand. We think we will. What happens is you request a book, you fill out information about yourself, including a short statement about why you're excited, why you want to have this experience. Once all the requests are in, we'll take a random selection from within the numerous requests we see. And after that, there'll be judges who look through them and sort through them and then make selections for the lucky few who get them. Now, in some cases, they're very limited, but others, like the X Mansion that I mentioned, there'll be many more guests. Overall, we're expecting over 4,000 of what we're calling golden tickets to go out this year for folks who can stay in one of these icons.
Wow, it's amazing. And I was reading earlier this year, you offered Christina Aguilera's home on Airbnb.
Yeah.
I was wondering how much interest there was with that and whether that and ideas like it prompted this icon experience.
Well, we have seen, exceptional levels of interest in those kinds of icon-like listings that we've had in the past. We used to call them only on Airbnb. You may remember last year the Barbie house, where we basically recreated a Barbie house out of a listing in the hills of Malibu. And it was so much like the movie that you felt like you were walking into Barbie land. That got an enormous amount of attention. I think millions of people actually requested to book. And we've done similar things like a Shrek house last year, and then similar kind of quirky experiences with celebrities. You mentioned Christina Aguilera. We did one last year with Seth Rogen. So generally, the interest has been very high. There's a lot of excitement around it. We expect to see that again with these, and we're going to keep doing them. And I think hopefully the range of them will mean that there's something for everyone and every taste.
And you could put a price on these listings, right? But you don't. Why not?
Well, I think, as I said, we want them not to be something that only people with a lot of resources and means can do. And I think, making them free or very, very inexpensive is the right thing to do. Obviously, they're limited and they're exceptional experiences. It's not about like generating revenue for us. It's about generating excitement and interest. And we feel like that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. It sounds very exciting. I'm gonna be clicking request to book on most of those.
I like to hear that. That's great.
Good to speak with you, Jay Carney, Global Head of Policy and Communications at Airbnb.
Thank you.
Well, still to come, Dortmund hosting Paris Saint-Germain in the first leg of the Champions League semi-final. We'll have the results after a very short break. Stay with us. You're watching CNN. Welcome back. Police in New York making some arrests as a group of protesters gather at Fordham University's Lincoln Center campus. Al Shimon Prokopes is there.
Significant development here at Fordham. The group of students and former students that were behind me here at Fordham University, camped out in the lobby, have now been taken into custody by the NYPD. The NYPD just a short time ago releasing video, and in the video you could see the protesters lined up, police officers putting those zip ties on them, removing the tents that have been in the lobby of Fordham University since early this morning. The students have been refusing to leave. The school notified them that as a result they were being suspended. And then a short time ago, the school sent a letter to the NYPD, just like we saw with Columbia University last night and what we have previously seen with the NYU, asking the NYPD to come in and make arrests and to remove the individuals that were in the lobby.
What Fordham says was that there was a clear and present danger, that there was a safety concern, and regrettably, they needed to ask the NYPD to come in and remove the protesters. Also significantly, what's significant, Wolf, is that Fordham University is now asking the NYPD to remain on their campus, around their buildings, for the graduation on May 22nd. So this will now be the second university in the city of New York requesting the presence of law enforcement at their graduation.
Thanks to Shimon Prokopez there. We will continue to stay across that story. Well, I want to turn to sport now, and just one wonderful goal was not enough. Borussia Dortmund beating Paris Saint-Germain 1-0 in the first leg of the Champions League semi-final. Patrick Snell joins me now. And of course, the German team are hoping to secure their second Champions League title. Tell us about the game.
Yes, they most certainly are. They won the tournament back, Linda, in 1997 it was, when they were crowned champions of Europe after beating Juventus, it was, from memory, in that year's final. They got to the final in 2013 as well. They lost to FC Bayern Munich in that one in London. They hope to get to London final this year, though. It's going to be played at the English capital once again. They were just really good on the night, I felt, against their opponents, Paris Saint-Germain. Veteran striker, the 31-year-old Niklas Füllkrug, putting them ahead, and that was the only goal of the match. Kylian Mbappe did come close, the superstar for PSG, hitting the woodwork there, and then really from the same play, PSG hitting the woodwork again, would you believe? But they would be denied, but they will be absolutely kicking themselves after Ousmane Dembele misses a glorious chance to make it 1-1 on the night. It is a slender advantage to take to the French capital, Linda.
Yeah, incredible. And of course, I have to ask you about this baseball game. Some unwelcome guests showed up.
Yeah, the sports world all abuzz. It was a long, long Tuesday night in Phoenix, Arizona, where the LA Dodgers and the Diamondbacks were playing a Major League Baseball game because, well, the holdup was the bees. The start of the game delayed for almost 2 hours because a swarm of bees took over the netting behind home plate. You can see that there. Beekeeper Matt Hilton, the hero, he would eventually save the day. Armed with a scissor lift and a vacuum, he would eliminate the infestation there right in front of the very grateful crowd. There he is, the man of the moment, the crowd giving him a standing ovation, and he would just soak all in. Oh, what a wonderful moment for him and his family. How cool is this? There he is, busy at work. He would actually go on to throw out the first pitch as well. Hilton, a bit of background for you, Linda. Hilton was about 45 minutes or so away at his six-year-old son's T-ball game when he got the call to go to the big leagues and help out, and he did not let anyone down. You know, not the first time this year, by the way, that sporting event has been affected by bees. We had it at a tennis tournament in California as well. But you might just say a very busy, busy day for us worker bees, as I send it back to Lou.
A very busy day.
Yes.
And certainly what a superhero that beekeeper was. He loved that moment in the spotlight.
Incredible, yeah. I wonder what he's going to be saying. He did an interview with our Don Riddell as well, actually saying that when he gets home, he's going to tell his six-year-old son all about it. Incredible story. And really, you see the fans absolutely loving him as well. His life has changed forever, I will say. You know, if you have pest control, sometimes we get pest control coming to our houses. Well, his life just changed forever, I tell you.
Yeah, he might get quite a bit of work out of this. Certainly his moment his moment to shine. Patrick Snell, good to have you with us. Thanks so much. That just about wraps up our show. I'm Linda Kincaid. Thanks so much for joining us. I'll see you same time tomorrow.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.